Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things going on. We're going to get some rainfall. This is the season of nuts on the Gulf Coast. I'm going to talk a little bit about nut trees. We're going to talk about how to make hickory nut butter. We're going to talk about how to identify the incredible hickories that are out in the woods right now. So stay tuned for that. I wanted to follow up on one thing from our last hour that's very useful for all of you who are looking at trees and shrubs in your lawn. And let's be clear. Any shrub or tree of any size is going to have roots that extend from that shrub or tree at least as far as the tree is tall. So if you've got a 10-foot tall tree, I guarantee you, you've got roots 10 foot away, at least 10 feet away from that trunk. And most of the roots that are really providing benefits to the tree in terms of taking up moisture and in terms of taking up nutrients and in terms of dealing with oxygen, they're going to be within 6 inches of the surface, and they're going to be at the edge of where the roots are. So if you want to find the most active roots on your tree, look at the or shrub, look at the height of that shrub or tree, and then go out and go out to the height of that tree. If it's a 10-foot tall tree, go out 10 feet from the tree. All right? And right there is where the most active roots are going to be. That's just about the sweet spot for where most of your root activity is going to be. And that's the part that needs to be protected. Now, it's an interesting problem, isn't it? Because if you've got a 70-foot tall or an 80-foot tall tree, that means the most active roots may not even be in your yard. Wow. They may be in your neighbor's yard. And it's just, what do you do about that? Well, at that point, you got to hope that tree's going to take care of itself, because you can't, it's very hard to fertilize a large tree like that, if you see what I'm saying. And in that reality, a large tree like that shouldn't need fertilizer. Don't worry about it. It's not a thing. But don't try to put your fertilizer right next to the tree. Put it out to where the active roots are. And when you're mulching, the mulch has the most benefit when the mulch is out where the active root zone is. And that's usually several feet away from your tree. So it's something, if you've got a tree that you really want to protect, and a camellia is one of those things, remove the grass in a larger area around that tree. And it makes a big difference. Grass and shrubs and trees don't get along. They don't get along for several reasons. Grass is very aggressive in terms of taking nutrients and moisture before it can get to the tree roots. It's very difficult for grass and trees and shrubs to compete all in the same place. One of them's going to win. Sometimes it's the trees and sometimes it's the grass, depending on the age of either. But it's just something you got to think about. These roots are way out there. And so when you fertilize, you have to think about that just a little bit. Don't use herbicides. If you use a herbicide in your lawn, if you use a weed and feed, and that weed, let's think about this. You're using a weed and feed. This is a weed and feed is something that I would tell you never, ever, ever under any circumstance to use. Because even if you want the weed part to work, the herbicide part to work, it's not going to work well. Because you can never really apply a weed and feed that's going to be effective at the same time that the fertilizer is going to be. It just doesn't work. So always put your herbicide on separately from your fertilizer if you feel like you need to use a fertilizer. but or a herbicide. But listen, let's be clear. If you put a herbicide on your lawn to stop the weeds, that herbicide isn't smart enough to distinguish your shrub and tree from other weeds. And that herbicide is going to think that your shrub and tree is a weed. You think I'm kidding? No, I'm not kidding. Why would I kid? And why would you think it's any different? Because chemicals aren't that smart. So that herbicide is designed to do more damage to things that aren't grasses. And trees aren't grasses. It's their broadleafs, just like all the things that your herbicide is designed to kill. And it will damage your camellia. It will damage your tree. If you've got a tree or a shrub, and it's got roots in the lawn, and you know how to determine if it's got roots in the lawn, because you look at the height of your shrub or your tree, and then you count out that same height away from the tree. You just step off. If it's 10 feet tall, you step off 10 feet. And I guarantee you it's got roots in the lawn. Yep, lots of roots. And you put a herbicide there, what do you think's going to happen? It ain't good. So just something to think about roots and trees and shrubs. They really aren't right next to the tree unless the tree has just been planted. If the tree has any size and any age and any health, that root system's going to be way, way out there. You got to think about that. Think about it while you're working on things. Hey, listen, can I just talk about something like hickories? Because they're so neat. Alabama, this is really important. This is a great center of nuts. And I want to talk about all kind of nuts. Somebody called me and asked me about chinkapins. Let's talk about chinkapins later. But let's talk right now about hickories. Because Alabama is the world's center of hickory diversity. I can't remember how many. I think there's about 12 species of hickories in Alabama, something like that. There's about a dozen of them. And I know I've been to lots of places where I can find 6, 7, or 8 hickories in one place. It's amazing. This is in Alabama, and they're really incredible, and the nuts that they produce can be really delicious. The nuts that are generally thought of to be the best tasting nuts are the nuts that come from hickories that have shaggy barks. And there's a bunch of hickories that have shaggy barks. There's northern shag bark, there's southern shag bark, there's red hickory, and there's kingnut hickory. The shaggy bark hickories have, it's not just the shaggy barks that have good nuts, but the shaggy barks probably are most famous for their sweet nuts. And they're all really good. What do I mean by shaggy? Do y'all remember? Is it in anybody's memory of what a shaggy bark hickory looks like? You go in the woods and you're looking at trees, and suddenly you notice these trees where the bark seems to be peeling off in these long, long strips. It's just like the bark got shredded, and it's tipping off at the top and tipping off in the bottom, and it makes the tree look like it's hairy. It's big, thick sheets of bark that are coming off, but it looks hairy at a large scale. That's shaggy. It looks kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a mastodon, hairy. Just these big pieces of bark coming off. Shaggy bark hickory trees. They have really sweet nuts. And they're the ones that people gravitate towards because they're easy to find. There are many species of shaggy bark hickory. If you find a shaggy bark hickory, as you will sometimes in the floodplains along the Alabama River, and sometimes up the slopes in the Red Hills, you'll see these big football-shaped nuts. The big football-shaped nuts, they're kingnut hickories. They're probably the easiest to crack open. They're really treasured. Probably got more meat in them than any other. Shellbark hickory is what it's called. Kingnut shellbark hickory. Really big nuts. But I'll tell you, the northern shagbark, the southern shagbark, the red hickories, they all have these beautiful nuts these really great nuts. Mockernut hickory has a smaller nut, but you know, it's very sweet. If you've got a mockernut hickory, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about those nuts. And here's what you do with them. If you're ready, when we come back.
Is not an iris or a wild rose, but a little flower of which I'll tell, known as Brave Coney Bell.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I am looking at questions. I'm going to try to get to them as best I can, given how ZipWhip helps us to look at these things. And we're gonna get back to. Hey, we talked about finish this conversation about hickories, because it's really, really important for you to know. And you folks who spend a lot of time in the woods, you're looking at hickory trees, and one of the things you need to know is there's a lot of hickory trees out there, man. There's a lot of them. There's and some of them have good sweet tasting nuts, and some of them have bitter tasting nuts. The hickory tree that people see in the Delta a lot, really abundant there, it's in those wetlands, it's bitter pecan. And folks, it's got the name bitter pecan for a reason. The nuts look a little bit, it will vaguely remind you of a pecan tree. It actually has kind of a scaly bark to it too. Sometimes you'll see the bark get a little bit shaggy, but it's not sweet. It's growing in these bottoms, in the Mobile Tensaw Delta, in the very wet areas. And the nuts on it are kind of bitter. It's good to know that. And the other one that grows in bottomlands a little farther north, you may see it in the Red Hills a good bit. Bitternut hickory, it gets to be a really big tree. It's a big, beautiful tree. It's a really beautiful tree. I love the way they look. But the nuts are not good. They're just not that good. They're a little bitter. Bitter pecan, bitter nut hickory. You see what I'm saying? People have been giving you warnings with these names for a long time. But there are a lot of hickories that have really great nuts. And I mentioned most of the shag barks. The bark is really shaggy, and as long as it's not growing in just the worst sort of bottom land, it's going to have a very sweet nut. It's going to have a great nut. Southern shagbark, northern shagbark, king nut, red hickory, beautiful, great nuts. Mockernut hickory is another one with really tasty nuts. It's just that mockernut hickory, the name's giving you a warning. Good old name for that tree. Mockernut has a big, big husk and a relatively small nut. So it's kind of, you know, you think you're getting a lot. But you know what? Here's how you do those nuts. Here's how you do hickories. And this is the secret to hickory nut milk, hickory nut butter. Rather than trying to pick all the meat out of it. Now, if you've got king nut hickory, you can do it just like a regular pecan. It's a little harder to crack, but not much. You can just take it out, crack the meat out of it. But with most of those other hickories, the traditional way of doing it is to crack the whole shell, not the husk. You take the husk off, it'll fall off if it's a hickory. In most cases, the husk, that big outer husk, falls off. Inside you've got a shell, and inside of the shell you've got a kernel, and it's the kernel that has the most meat and the most flavor. But traditionally with hickory nuts, traditional cultures who used hickory nuts in Alabama, they would crack the shell and the nut all together. And there's a bunch of ways of doing that. We can talk about how to do that. And throw it into the pot with water. And here's the funny part. If you crack it up just right, and you crack it up pretty good, the shell and the meat are going to separate. You see how it works? You skim off the parts you don't want, and you go with the meat. Now, that's just one way of thinking about it. There's another way of thinking about it. If you throw it into a pot of water, and you really want to do it traditionally, throw a bunch of shells, just throw everything in there. Crack the whole thing up really well. Throw it all into a pot of water and boil. And boil for a few hours, and you get that wonderful oil, that hickory nut oil, and you can skim it off the top. You can actually use it as a, you can use all the liquid as a syrup. It's absolutely delicious. Use it as a milk, if you will. You can let the butter, you can let the oils, if you skim it off the top, you can let it congeal as a butter. And it is absolutely delicious. There are lots of other little things you can do to it. You can tweak it here and there. Some people actually take hickory limbs and add it to the butter just a little bit to give it a little bit to beef up that hickory flavor just a little bit because they like it. But it makes a great syrup. William Bartram came through Alabama in, 77, a while back ago, he came through Alabama, and he said, you know, the Coassati and the other many tribes of Alabama that were around in those days, they had big storehouses. They had whole rooms of their houses were devoted to just storing hickory nuts because it was such an important commodity. And then he said, you know, they made me some of this. They made some corn cakes. They made some pancakes. Cornmeal pancakes, if you will. And they made some corn cakes, and they put some hickory nut butter on it. And he said, it was like the most delicious cream I've ever had in Europe. It was just unbelievably delicious. And that's what we've forgotten. It's a great part of American cuisine. It's something restaurants should start serving again. Hickory nuts. That's what Alabama was once famous for when Alabama knew what Alabama was all about. Hickory nut milk. A really beautiful thing to have. Something to think about when you're out in the woods running around looking at all those hickory trees thinking, gosh, there sure are a lot of hickory nuts falling. Is this going to be a big year for hickory nuts? It depends on the species, I expect. You know, a lot of nut trees, including a lot of oak trees, they go in cycles. People forget about this. And so they'll have big nut years. And then they'll go a year, next year, it won't be quite so big. And then the next year, it may be a really poor year altogether. And then it'll build a cycle again. And wild trees, they do this on purpose, I think. If they think with their genes, and their genes have been telling them for a long time, hey, guys, you know, if you produce the same number of acorns every year, you know what's going to happen? The squirrels are going to build up a population to eat all the nuts, and they'll eat every one of your nuts every year. So what they do is to kind of get the squirrels and ensure that some of the nuts actually germinate, and the squirrels don't get all of them, and that the worms don't get all of them. They'll have big years, and they'll build up a big squirrel population, and then the next year they won't have any nuts at all, and the squirrels will say, hey, oh, man, there ain't nothing to eat. And it kind of shakes off the squirrel population, if you see what I mean. And then the next year they can produce a really big crop again, and they won't have as many squirrels building up. So having fluctuating nuts is an attribute. You don't always produce the same every year. If you're a wild tree. But in some years, every tree is going to produce big nuts in Alabama. There's lots of trees that produce nuts. And, you know, it's a rare year when we don't have one of these groups of hickories or one of the walnuts or the chestnuts producing really big nuts. And that's a really, really good thing to think about. So while you're out looking at these trees in the woods, you're out hunting, think about all those hickory nuts falling around you if you're in really rich woods. Think about the pine. If you're hunting in longleaf pine, think about those pine nuts falling all around you. And often in those pine forests, in the longleaf pine forest, there's been a little bit of fire and it's still pretty intact. You might see a chinkapin with that big burry nut. And yeah, the nuts in it are kind of small compared to chestnuts, but they're actually quite good. There's plenty of meat there. You gotta wear gloves when you're handling that husk with a chinkapin. But get the husk off. Those little meats are just absolutely delicious. You can roast them if you like. They're really good that way. If you've got a chinkapin, it's good to see that they're cross-pollinated. You'll get better pollination. You'll get larger nuts and more of them, or at least larger husk and more of them. If you have some cross pollination with chinkapin. So if you've just got one chinkapin, get you another one so that you get some good cross pollination and you'll get a better set of nuts. All right, so we're going to be back here in just a minute. We got lots of your questions to answer this morning. We had kind of a good time talking about things, going from one thing to another, but it's good. We'll be back to your questions. I'm going to review them here during this little session, this break, as we call it, and we'll be back. 251-343-0106.
The rain is falling through the mist of sorrow that surrounded me. The sun could never fall away. The bliss that plays around me. Let it rain.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Some questions coming in. I'm going to try to get to all of them. Somebody asked me about what do I know about climbing hemp, climbing hemp vine. I have to wonder about what it means. Listen, common names can be deceptive. There is a plant out there. It's a member of the aster family. It's kind of over there with the asters, as a lot of other plants are. The aster, the sunflower family, they're all sort of grouped together as composites. And it's Mycania scandens, Mikania is the Latin name, Mycania scandens. And it's called climbing hemp vine. I think it's got some other names. I think I'll have to think of some of the other names. But climbing hemp vine is the name we're working with now, because that's the question. What do I know about climbing hemp vine? And Tony sent me this question. Listen, it is a wild vine. It's a native vine. It is a food source for some butterflies. That's pretty important for the little metal mark butterfly, for example. I think it's pretty exclusive to climbing hemp vine. It's a pretty little butterfly. There are other butterflies that no doubt use the flowers, which are pretty prolific. It can be a bit weedy. I can say that. It's not unattractive. I say that carefully. Not unattractive. But it's not stupendously beautiful either. It's just I'm breathing too much hemp vine here and I'm sneezing. So it's a very attractive vine this time of year. Moderately attractive vine. Let's give it that. And not a bad vine to grow. It's probably going to come up wild in your garden. It has nothing to do with the hemp that everybody else is talking about and trying to sell you right now, in whatever form they're trying to sell it to you. It is not related to, you know, marijuana. It's not related to hemp. It's a very different kind of thing. So don't get the two confused, even though it's called climbing hemp vine. I'm not sure why it's called hemp. It may be because the vines themselves are kind of stringy and probably could be used to make... I haven't tried it, but I guess the vines could be used to make string with, maybe. It's certainly one of the vines I use to tie up plants with in my garden. Yeah, I don't, you know, I always buy a ball of string and then I forget where I put it. So I go out and do what people have done for years, is I take vines of various kinds and tie my plants up with them. It works really well. Hemp works really well to do that. It's a really good vine to do that. Tony, let me know if you have any other questions about my cania. I've told you what I think I know, but your questions may prompt some other things, and we'll go from there. Climbing hemp vine. Someone sent me a message that they liberated some hurricane lilies from somewhere, and they're planting them in their yard. If they're yellow hurricane lilies or red hurricane lilies or the white hurricane lilies, we used to call them all hurricane lilies, like chorus, of various kinds and various colors. Listen, if you take those plants when they're in flower, and if you take them just after they flower, it is the wrong time to dig those plants. Just quickly, let me warn you once again, it is the worst time to dig those plants after they flower. You wait until after the leaves die down in April and May. That's the best time to move them. But the deed is done. You need to plant those bulbs right away because they cannot sit out if you dig them this time of year. You need to put them in the ground as soon as possible. And let's hope that they haven't developed many roots. So do not wait around. If you've dug bulbs of spider lilies, the red spider lilies, or the white peachy spider lilies, or the yellow spider lilies that are blooming well this time of year. If you've dug those this time of year, you need to plant them right away. Do not wait, because this is the time of year they develop root systems, and this is how they survive, by producing roots and leaves over winter. So if you wait around, see what I'm saying? If you wait around and plant them in spring, they've lost all year, and they probably have lost most of their carbohydrates. They're probably going to be really dried out, and they're going to be bad. Because you dug them this time of year, and the roots have probably already started forming, you're going to set them back pretty bad. So they may not bloom for a few years. But set them out now. Do not delay. If you're digging them, if you couldn't wait, if you want to dig a lycoris, if you want to dig the golden spider lilies that we call hurricane lilies, or the red spider lilies that we often call spider lilies, or the whites, the whitish spider lilies that bloom without the leaves, the peachy lycoris, the peachy spider lilies, the white with little streaks of peach in them. You see them around old home sites occasionally here in South Alabama. If you're going to dig those, wait until the leaves form. As soon as the flowers drop, the leaves are going to develop. Right? Those leaves keep the plant going. That's where it gets all of its energy, is from those leaves developing over winter. And it gets its energy in winter. Wait until it has stored all of its energy over winter, and then dig it when the leaves die down and the roots retreat in April and May. And you can mark the spot. If you don't, you know, one of the things, if you see the flowers, you're worried about what the leaves look like, you'll learn to recognize the leaves pretty easily. But if you're worried about losing track of the plant, take a little flag or take a little stick or something and put it where the plants were flowering, and you'll see the leaves come up. And leave that stick there until April and May, and then when the leaves die down, start dying down in April and May, you'll know just what to dig. Dig those plants then, and then move them. That's the best way to do it. You may have many reasons for digging them now. There probably, some of them may be good reasons, but one of the good reasons to dig them now has nothing to do with the plant, because the plant hates to be dug right now. It hates it. Ooh, it hates it. It's going to not like it at all. So plant them right away. maybe they will forgive you, and in 2 or 3 years, they'll bloom okay. That's the story. That's what you need to know. So there it is. So that's the best. Rusty in Moss Point says, what are the best nut trees for the Gulf Coast? You know, I think chinkapins are really great nut trees. Hickories are great nut trees. They take up a lot of space. We do hickories really, really well. It's not easy to have a hickory in a small yard, and it could take a while for a hickory to start producing. There's no question, but they're really great nuts for the Gulf Coast. I'm experimenting with hazelnuts. I don't know how well they're going to do on the Gulf Coast. Maybe not that well, but we're kind of experimenting and looking at some hybrids between the native hazelnuts and the European hazelnuts, trying to figure out how they do, how far south they can go. I think the Red Hills may be a good spot. Red Hills being Monroe County, Clark County, on those better clays up there, I think they'll do very, very well there. Pine nuts, longleaf pine nuts, maybe one of the really, some of the finest nuts you can grow. They're really delicious, and they're really good roasted. There's ways to collect them. We can talk about that. It's a really great use. You don't get big crops every year, but when you get a big crop of them, boy, it's gigantic. And pine nuts are really great nuts, for the Gulf Coast too. Nothing wrong with pecans. It can take a while, and you often have to spray pecans to make sure they do well. Somebody asked me a question earlier about whether pecans, what happens to an old grove of pecans when it just seems to quit producing? And there are a lot of reasons for that. It could be a nutritional issue. It could be that you've got phylloxera or a whole host of other pest problems so bad that they're just not producing that well. They may need top working. And this is one of the things that that the average person doesn't want to do. You know, when pecans get very, very old and very mature, they can quit growing, and they're often, and because they're not growing very well, they don't produce a lot of flowers. And those older pecan trees get top worked. They get pruned in various ways. It may be that, we can talk, this may be something that Chris Francis needs to study up on, is top working pecans. Maybe he can help you with top working those pecans. I'll have to get Chris on and see if he's done any top working of pecans. There are many ways to do it. Sometimes you can just prune. Sometimes there's grafting done when you top work a pecan. Sometimes just pruning helps. Probably you're going to need to fertilize those older pecan trees, though, and that's probably the place to start. It can take a lot of fertilization to get a pecan tree growing again. I don't want to give you that formula right off the top of my head. I'm going to go study what pecan tree growers do, and we'll come back next week and talk a little bit about that. You know, I'm going to talk to Chris Francis, too, about top working pecans. See if we can come up with a good solution for homeowners who don't have a lot of trees but want to kind of get them back into shape, and they want to do it without the trees falling on their houses, which is always a big problem with pecans. But there it is, something to think about. We got some other questions. I'm going to get to those here. Stay tuned. We got to take a break. If you have any questions about hickory nuts, I want you to understand those hickory nuts. Man, they are so neat. Let's talk about that when we get a chance.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to hit some things really quickly. Somebody sent me a great question. My yard guy wasn't able to trim my azaleas this summer, but can I do it now? I know I'll lose flowers, but will it hurt the plant to lightly trim them now? Here's a little secret. If you trim your azaleas correctly, if you trim them correctly, it almost doesn't matter what time you trim. The problem is we trim them incorrectly, so we have to be very careful about what time we trim. Listen, here's what you want to do. Those big wands, those big cowlicks that come out of the top, right, that are much longer than the, much higher than the canopy, they stick way up above everything else. That's what makes your plant look bad. This is a great time to prune those out. Go right under the canopy where those big wands, the big ones that stick way out above everything else, where they emerge beneath the canopy. Take your little hand shears. Don't take those big motorized things, man. You'll make a mess. You do not want to do that this time of year. But take those little hand shears, go right under the canopy, and clip those off. Just clip them all off. It won't take you, there aren't that many. And really, it only takes two or three to make your bush look really untidy. But if you've got a dozen of them, it won't take you 2 or 3 minutes to clip them all off. Just clip them off right beneath the canopy. It won't affect flower production at all, because all of the rest of the tips that are in the canopy, which is where you want most of the flowers, they're still sitting right there. They're untouched. So you got plenty of flowers. You've neatened up your bush. And in fact, I don't want to say this too loud because people who prune badly will misunderstand me. This is not a bad time to prune. Not a bad time to prune at all if you prune just the way I said to do it. So go ahead. Feel free to prune your azaleas. I hope you heard me. Just prune the calyx. Just prune the big wands that stick up way above everything else. And you'll neaten up that bush. You'll lower the height of the bush. You'll make it more compact. And you won't affect the flower production at all. You'll still have a great flower show. You see what I'm saying? You see how that works? We're going to get back to this pecan question next week. I'm going to do a little bit of research. Not going to talk off the top of my head. We're going to deal with that next week. Best time to lay sod? The best time to lay sod to me is late October and November. Start getting ready now. It's a great time to lay sod. It is the best time. We can talk about why. Next week, I'll put sod on the schedule. We'll talk about lawns. Next week's a great time to do it. Good to hear from Keith. Your Norfolk pine. Tony, I'm not going to have time to talk about that Norfolk pine. Will you remind me next week? Because there's several solutions to your problem. As Norfolk pine's getting bigger, let's talk about that next week before you do too much to it. There's a couple of great ways of dealing with that. I have a call. Do I have a caller, Charlie? Johnny, hey, man, it's great to hear from you.
Hey. I wanted to ask you real quickly, spraying BT onto my collards and my cabbages. It just seems to run off because those things are kind of waxy. Do you think enough of it is sticking to them to create an issue for those worms, or should I do something else?
Yeah, so, well, that's a good question. You know, there are some people who add sticky stuff to make stuff stick a little bit better. I haven't really, it has been very effective, and I've used BT on my collards and my cabbages and my broccoli, all of which have slick leaves, and it's been very effective. I have not had any problems. The one thing that I will say about BT is that any rainfall and it's gone. So you really do have to spray it about every 3 or 4 days. But usually you'll catch, you know, usually you'll catch a cycle. Johnny, I think it's probably okay. Use a fine mist. I dial my hose back when I spray BT so that I get as fine a mist as possible. Do you have a pump-up sprayer, or are you using a little? Do you have a pump-up sprayer?
Yeah, I got a pump-up sprayer.
Yep. Yeah, so just dial it back so that it's as fine a mist as possible. I think it'll be just fine. It should be just fine. And you know, it's not, it doesn't have to be up, you don't uptake it in the plant. The plant doesn't take it up. It really just has to sit, get enough of it has to get on the surface to kill those young caterpillars that you can't see, often down in the center of the plant. And then underneath is really important, of course. So you got to get that wand and spray underneath. I think it'll be fine. You can use a sticky stuff. They make sticky stuff that you can add to it that is designed so that it doesn't harm the plant in the process. So you can use a sticky stuff, and you can add it to your sprayer. But I haven't, and I'm usually pretty successful with the BT.
Right. Okay, sounds good. Appreciate your help.
All right. Johnny is the champion cabbage grower. I aspire to grow cabbages. As beautiful as Johnny has grown cabbages, I think he grows the best cabbages in the whole world. They're so pretty, and he does a great job with them. We don't have much time. We got a lot of things to follow up on. Take a look at those hickory trees while you're out this year. While you're out this fall, hickory trees are beautiful. They're going to be turning a golden yellow. It is one of the great attributes of Alabama. It is one of the glories of Alabama. It is, if you don't think to yourself, man, I am so lucky to live in Alabama because it is the center of hickory tree diversity in North America, you've missed the whole point of living in Alabama. If you think it's great to live here because of a football team, you haven't paid attention to the hickories yet. The hickories in Alabama, they are so cool. They're so much a part of what we need to be doing. All right. Listen, folks, it's been fun. We'll be back next week. Hold your questions till then. We're going to deal with your pecans. We're going to deal with your Norfolk pines. We're going to be back next week. I look forward to talking to you. Y'all have a great week.
Waiting for a train on us feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wiper slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that driving knew.